B-Pod Studios.
Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hour number two, Zolak and Bertrand, Ted Johnson in for Zoe today. Bert Breer of the MMQB is with us. Hey, Bert, what's up?
What's up, Bert?
Hey, what's happening? I'm having some trouble with my mic.
All right, hold on.
I think we're good. No, I got to tighten. That's how I tighten it, right? Because it's really loose.
Hold on.
Oh, but I got to turn
that up. You can lower your chair, too, if that helps.
Yeah, it looks like
let's get him a shorter chair. You got to get him a shorter chair.
Yeah, you got to get the short chair.
Okay, I got it.
That's what you got to do.
See, that's what happens.
Get the short one. Change out the chair.
I want the straight.
Yeah, take the comfortable chair.
See, I got kind of long legs though, so sitting in these short chairs is fine. I can deal with it.
Bert, news
I'm
today.
I'm resilient. You know that.
News today. Yeah, warrior. News today. Greg Schiano going to be named the defensive coordinator of the Patriots. What is your reaction to hearing that? We've obviously talked a lot about his college track record.
He wasn't very good in Tampa Bay.
And this is what I want to know. Why was he booted from Ohio State? How much did he suck there?
I mean, there was one
way to put it.
I mean,
I framed it that way on purpose.
No, probably the worst defense in the history of the program last year.
It's better. I mean, they didn't have Nick Bosa most of the season.
That's what it was. I mean, Maryland, okay, the University of Maryland scored 50 on them. So, like, I'm not saying...
But the year before that, it was one of the most dominating defenses.
The year before that, they were really good. But the year before, I mean, there was still... I think part of the issue with Greg at Ohio State was, and this was the feeling there, he tried to do a little too much. He was very, very aggressive, and they got burned a lot. And they played a certain style when Greg was the DC there where they were... It really necessitated having awesome defensive backs, right? Because they were going to be very aggressive with their front. And look, the corners who went through there, Gary Connolly, first-round pick. Marshawn Lattimore, first-round pick. Eli Apple, first-round pick. It was an assembly line of just like guys who become top-shelf NFL corners, right? And this year they didn't have that as much. This year it finally caught up to them, all the guys that they had lost that had left early to go to the NFL. And it didn't look very good. You know, if you're really, really aggressive and then you're not great on the back end, it's going to be a problem. So and they kind of got, to be fair, they kind of got their crap together against Michigan, then looked pretty good against Northwestern and won the Rose Bowl.
But what you're describing is someone who did not adapt to the talent he had on his roster.
Right.
So you're talking about a head coach who probably does it better than anybody when it comes to adapting to the talent on the roster.
Right.
Versus someone who couldn't manage it without the talent.
Right. And the thing is, I mean, the one thing I would say too about Greg is that he was at Ohio State, he had autonomy. He was especially after Luke Fickell left to go to University of Cincinnati, he became the head coach of the defense, right? And because Urban Meyer
let him do his thing.
Urban Meyer's background is on offense.
Right.
And so this is different, of course. Now he's going to a place where the head coach has a defensive background. But yeah, I mean, you got to call it what it is. He wasn't very good. And there were the last month of the season, I would say there were a lot of people in and around that program that were calling for him to be fired, and, you know, he was fired.
Were you surprised, Bert, that Bill went outside of the organization and named a guy defensive coordinator a guy in Brian Flores who'd been in the system for 10 years and was never given the title?
Yeah, and I think that, part of it is, so they actually went through this, you know, tail end of your career, right? So they lost defensive coordinators in back-to-back years. They had... Obviously, Rack gets the Cleveland job in 2005, and then they lose Eric the next year to the Jets. And they had Dean Pease on the staff. And so I think that that's sort of what you need when you start to lose guys that, you lose two coordinators on the same side of the ball in consecutive years. You want to have an older, more experienced guy who can step in and kind of settle the waters. It's tough to just sort of roll the dice on young guys twice in a row. Which, you know, maybe there's a guy like a Brendan Daly on the staff that might have made some sense. So they don't have a Dean Pease on the staff right now. Right. You know what I mean? They don't have somebody who has that level of experience that Dean had. And so I think that sort of forced their hand. I think it was either my perception of it is you either bring in an older guy as defensive coordinator, which is what they did, or you promote someone or try to put move someone into that role and then backstop them with a senior defensive assistant, which is like what they did in the front office when they lost Pioli. Remember when they lost Pioli, they elevated Nick Caserio. Mm-hmm. They also brought in Floyd Reese from the outside. So Floyd Reese became the...
de facto.
Right. Like Floyd Reese was the guy like where, okay, Nick, we trust you. We believe that you're the right guy for this job, but...
like a safety net.
We also know you're. We also know there's a bunch of stuff that you don't know yet.
Gotcha.
And so we're going to make sure that we have somebody in place to answer all the questions that need to be answered.
617-779-0985. Burt Breer is with us. We're going to be talking more about this situation as the Patriots are set to announce that they have hired a defensive coordinator. It will be Greg Schiano, former head coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks. Why didn't it work in Tampa Bay?
It didn't work in Tampa Bay because if you're going to run a program the way that Greg runs his program, you have to win fast. It's just, I mean, that's the way it is. And
that's how you get buy-in. If you're going to be the hardo,
you better win
to get buy-in.
Is that similar to Matt Patricia? Same type of thing?
Yes. Okay. I would say that was similar. Yeah. I mean, I just think that this day and age, this is a different athlete than was coming into the NFL 20 years ago.
Got that right.
Right. Like, this is a different kid. Like, the kid who's coming into the NFL, look, there's no other way to put it. He's had his ass kissed since he was 12.
More about me, bro.
Right? Like, most guys who play in the NFL are identified at a young age, and they're treated that way in high school. And then they get recruited to college, and they're treated that way as recruits. And then they get to college, and in a lot of these programs, the programs are run a certain way where the kids are going to be treated like stars. They get to the NFL. That's a shock. You know, like all of a sudden now this guy is telling me that I ain't worth anything after I've been told my whole life
how great I am.
Like, how great I am. Like, what's going to happen? Well, I remember talking to Eric about this, and I remember Eric's whole thing was
Mangini.
Eric Mangini. I remember talking to him when he was, you know, with Cleveland. Part of Eric's problem, I think, was that, you know, when he got fired in New York, he had the sort of like, okay, like, well, Brett Favre got hurt, right? Oh, so Brett Favre gets hurt, and then I got a head coaching job right away. And so it's very easy to blame everybody else when that happens.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, if you get fired, then you've got to take a step back, then you've got to, like, assess things a little bit. Eric said to me, I remember when he was his first year in Cleveland, I was like, well, don't you think you have to change a little bit? He's like, well, as long as I give these guys results, then the rest doesn't matter. And that's fine. You have to find ways to buy yourself time to get those results sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because sometimes the talent might not be good enough. Sometimes there might be an issue here or an issue there. Like, sometimes it takes more than – you can't just snap your fingers and win. You can't just snap your fingers and turn a guy into a player that maybe he wasn't yesterday. And so I think for Greg, part of the issue was if you're going to be that demanding, you better get them results, right? And I think that with Bill, I mean, Ted, you were here. Like, if Bill had to fumble around for 3 years before he got it right, it might have been hard for him to maintain buy-in.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, I don't think it was – I think in 2001 when Bledsoe goes down, like, there's still some question. Like,
started 0-2.
Right.
And we were 5-11 the year before.
Right. Yeah.
And then Mo Lewis, you know, and then Tom comes in, and all of a sudden we just started putting some wins together and started believing. You
right.
know, and that's how you get the buy-in.
Miss something?
You got to wear your lucky jersey. Don't wash the lucky socks.
Rub your ball 16 times.
Yep. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
Nothing pretty about this one except the final score. Clock hits triple zeros. Now with the Lakers coming to Boston on trade deadline day after taking a horrific beating in Indiana, the stage is set. The Celtics survive in Cleveland. The final score, 103-96. Celtics have won 10 of 11.
We'll be talking to Brad Stevens momentarily, head coach of the Boston Celtics. Who should ask the first question, Hardy? Should we hand it off to Ted Johnson?
Is it too late to practice with Ted?
No, I don't think coach is on the line yet, so we have time.
Okay, let's practice real quick.
All right. You know how this works, Ted?
No,
Zoe always asks the first question, but he usually asks a one.
Okay.
And so we've started to sort of mock it, and we all have fun with it, and Zoe plays long, and Zoe has a good time with it, too. I play myself. Yeah. Hardy plays the role of Brad Stevens, and then you ask the first question.
Okay.
You think you can do that?
Okay, I'll try.
All right, we welcome in on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, head coach Brad Stevens. Hey, Brad.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Coach, that parade yesterday was awesome, wasn't it? Did you see how many people showed up for that parade, Coach?
You are playing the role of Scott Zolak perfectly.
That's almost as good as my Dunkin' Donuts live commercial. That's perfect.
Did I do okay there?
You nailed it. Nailed it.
All right. We'll see how it goes when we get him on.
Hey, Coach, just coming off the buzz of the Super Bowl and the parade, man. Yeah. What you been doing? Woo. What you been up to? I haven't talked to you in a week. What have you been doing?
I haven't watched one dribble in like a month. I don't know.
The thing about Coach Stevens, he seems like he's a really good sport about it, though. You know, he's, yes. I don't see a, he's not a curmudgeon. He's
no, very, not at all.
Very easy to talk to and very nice and accommodating.
You know what we got to ask him today is the difference between coaching players when they're in college and coaching them when they're professionals. Right?
Yep.
We've sort of been talking about that today.
Nice little tie in there.
Something that we've been talking about. The difference when you're coaching them is, you know, I say kids, which they still are in college, versus when they, you know, come to the professional ranks. That's something we could talk to him about. But, of course, we got to talk to him about his team, and he joins us now.
Nice.
Celtics head coach Brad Stevens on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hi, Coach.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
We're going to hand it off to Ted Johnson. He's going to ask the first question, filling in for Zoe today.
Lots of pressure.
And we're hoping that it's a good one.
Hey, Coach Steve, it's good to talk to you. How about that parade yesterday, huh? That parade was awesome, wasn't it?
Don't do that.
You know what? I was scrolling through the channels in my hotel room in Cleveland, where it wasn't quite, not as many people on the streets in Cleveland, and did get the chance to watch some of it on the NFL Network, which was fun.
Did you have to do some deep breathing exercises with Gordon Hayward to get him to go back out onto that court in Cleveland last night, considering what happened to him the last time he played there?
You know what? I didn't even talk to him about it. I just figured that he's been through 50 games now, and obviously anytime you walk back into that gym, I'm sure there's a little bit of, you know, at the very least, reflection. But I saw in his comments after the game, you know, I think it just made him appreciate getting a chance to play even more. And sometimes when you're in the middle of this and you've played 54 straight games, which we have, you know, you don't get those opportunities to reflect and have a little bit of perspective. So I think it is actually probably a good thing to walk in that gym and to say, you know what, I've come a long way in 15 months, and sometimes I just need to remember that.
Brad, you've won 10 of your last 11, five straight. The only loss of this stretch has been that very competitive game against Golden State. Do you feel you're playing your best basketball as a team right now?
You know, I think we're playing better. I hope that we're not playing our best basketball as a team. I hope that's for down the road. But you hopefully grow into that. I do think that we've shored some things up on both ends. But you have to do it, and you have to do it over and over. You know, we've got four tough games heading into the All-Star break here, and this has been quite a stretch we've been on. And guys have done a great job of, you know, competing and staying together through this. And when we've been shorthanded, continuing to do what we need to do to be successful. And, you know, we're drawing great inspiration from the teams that have kind of set the bar for us here in Boston.
Hey, Coach, all kidding aside, it is good to talk to you. And last night, Jason Tatum had a game-high 25 points, career-high 12 made free throws. And after the game, you commented on it. You liked his aggressiveness going to the rim. Is that something you'd like to see more of out of Jason Tatum, or is it one of those deals where you got to pick your spots in games and against certain matchups?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both of that. And I think that there are times where last night he was being guarded by smaller guards a lot. And so we posted him a little bit more. But I thought that his intention was very clear out of the gate last night. On his first shot attempt of the game, which he actually missed, I thought it was a really aggressive, good move. You know, one that we, you know, right away on the bench, you could see and feel that he was going to be aggressive going to the rim. And it was good to see him rewarded for that. He took advantage of it. He's a great free throw shooter. And he's not always going to be guarded by smaller guys who he's able to take into the post, and he's going to need to be able to stretch the floor and utilize his individual skill to create shots, especially late in the clock without going to the rim. But when you can, I think it's really beneficial, and it sets a good tone for our team.
Brad, we're about 27 hours out from the trade deadline. How does communication between you and Danny work over the next day or so?
Well, in person and on phone. I don't know what else to say. I mean, we talk a lot. But we talk a lot regardless. You know, it's nothing new. I've been in situations, you know, here my first year, we traded most of our team before the trade deadline. So that week was pretty uneventful. And then the second year, you know, it was nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen up till 10 minutes before. And then in the last 10 minutes, I got two phone calls, and all of a sudden we had traded away two and brought in three. So you never know. But I will say this, over the last couple of years, you know, people have made a big deal out of the trade deadline, but we've been more quiet than not. And, you know, obviously when you're talking about a team in the middle of the year, you got to figure out how you can be the best version of yourselves. There's short and long-term things to manage there. But we do like our team, and, you know, it would have to be something that I'm guessing would knock our socks off to make us move. I don't see, you know, obviously you pay attention to the rumors and you hear all the talk and everything else, but until Danny comes to me with something that's concrete and actually has legs, I don't really pay much attention to it.
Also tomorrow, you've got a matchup coming up with the Lakers, and last night the Lakers suffered a big loss, one of the worst losses of LeBron James's career. He's coming back off injury. What have you sort of seen from him and where he's at right now?
Well, he's LeBron. I mean, he at different times of the last two games that he's played has done exactly what he's always done. He can score it from anywhere. His extended range has opened up a whole set of possibilities over the last 5 years for him, and his ability to get downhill and get into the paint. And I think that the reality is you know, it's Celtic Flakers. It's its own entity on Thursday night, and you know, they getting beat by 40 will do nothing but hone their focus and enhance their focus coming in. I mean, everybody has games like that in the NBA, but that's not the Lakers team that we're going to see tomorrow night.
Celtics coach Brad Stevens joining us. Coach, you said after the game last night that in reference to Jaylen Brown, that he looks a lot like he did in the past and even better. What is it that you're seeing in Jaylen Brown's game right now that's got you excited?
You know, what I was talking about, and the question was on both ends of the court, but I was really focused on the defensive end, was he's a guy that in his first year, I think as he learned kind of the NBA playbook of different teams and he learned actions that you could anticipate and be ready to guard almost unconsciously after you go through it for 82 games or after 2 years, 164 games. And you know what's coming. You know how to guard things better, and you're able to guard a bunch of actions more versatile. And I think that that's where he's really improved. You know, his first year, we ended up putting him on shooters that ran off screens a lot. He wasn't as comfortable guarding up bigger size or guys that were really pick and roll players, but he's gotten so much better at both of those that it's added to our ability to put him really on anybody 1 through 4. And that's been a huge step for him. I think it's happened over the course of time, but his strides this year have been even bigger. You know, offensively, I don't worry too much about him. He's a guy that, you know, he had his struggles early on, but those things are going to even out over time with a guy as talented as he is.
Brad, before we let you go, where are you guys health-wise? I know you're dealing with some things, whether it be Kyrie with the hip or Marcus Morris, yep, the knee, and obviously Aaron Baines looks like that's going to be a couple of weeks. Where's all this stand?
Yeah, so Baines is out for sure. I haven't heard yet on Morris and Irving today. Robert Williams will also be reevaluated today. He was out last night with lower back. So I'll get more information as we go on through the day, and hopefully those guys are you know, close to available or available, and we don't anticipate any of those three being long-term issues. Baines a little bit longer. Baines will be out through the All-Star break, and, you know, we hope to get him back soon thereafter because, obviously, you know, we miss him in the ability to play a little bit bigger and stronger when he's out.
Celtics-Lakers coming up tomorrow. Coach, we also had one other question, not related to your team right now in the moment, but we've talked today a little bit about how coaches sort of have to do things a little differently when they're coaching in college versus coaching in the pros, and I'm curious to know what you make of that and what changes you've made since but you know, going from being a college coach to being the head coach of the Celtics?
Well, first of all, I don't think you coach differently as much as it's just two totally different things, right? Like, I think I always say this, when guys come to your college, they choose to come to your college. And at Butler, we weren't ever involved in guys that were only going to be there 1 year. So it wasn't like a deal where guys were just coming for a quick stop. They were coming for 4 years. They were coming because they loved the school, and they chose the school, and they knew you, and they chose to play for you. And so they knew what they were getting into in a lot of ways. And in the pros, you know, you could have people that choose to come to play and free agents, but you also have trades and draft picks, and you're blending all those people together who are all at different ages and stages of their career. So the challenges are unique, and then the schedules, the games, the 40 games versus 80 games, it's totally different when you add in practice time and everything else. As far as coaching philosophy and the way that I try to go about it, I haven't changed. I was told by a lot of people that this was going to be a heck of a challenge coming in here. It has been a heck of a challenge. I've learned a great deal. I looked at it as a great opportunity to learn and grow as a coach and get better at it, challenge yourself at the highest level. But I think the number one thing is just kind of said, hey, I'm going to be me, and if that's not good enough, so be it. You know, like, that's just part of it. But I think that you just have to be yourself, and I've tried to stay true to that over the last 12 years as a head coach.
So is it at all different reaching a 19-year-old versus reaching a 29-year-old?
That's a good question. I just think that you may approach it differently. Think about how much further along we all were at 29 than 19. That's the way it's supposed to be. You know, like a guy like Al Horford, Baines, 32, they have five kids between them. They're closer to my age than they are to Jason Tatum's age. And so, like, it is a little bit different when you're depending on the different age groups. But at the end of the day, you're still communicating in a way that we've got to come up with a game plan that's best for our team. Here's how we all do it. We have to appreciate each other's strengths and where we all are in this journey. And we have to understand what we don't do as well and let other guys cover us with that, you know? And so there's a lot that goes into it, but it is a little bit different when you have all those different age groups. But that's what makes it fun.
All right, Coach, appreciate the time. As always, we'll talk next week.
All right, guys, have a good one.
All right, thanks, Coach. Brad Stevens joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Zo and Bertrand.
Ted Johnson in for Zoe today. Burt Breer, the MMQB, with us here on Zolak and Bertrand, 617-779-0985. Talking a little bit today about Greg Schiano, set to become the next defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. That was reported this morning. He's coming off a year at Ohio State that Burt Breer has described as the worst defense in the history of the program.
It was shockingly bad, though, man.
It was.
It was shockingly bad.
If anybody who watched that team this year, I mean, it was not good, man. It was just, like, end-to-end. Their best game of the year was against Michigan, and Michigan scored 40 points in that game.
So their best game was when they gave up 40?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. How many did they give up to Maryland?
I mean, and it was big play after big play after big play. I mean, like, I'm talking like 90-plus. Like, yeah. Against Penn State, they gave up the longest play in the history of the program. It's like 97-yard touchdown. Like, I'm just telling you, like, he was fired. He was still under contract. He was fired. There's a reason why that happened. It may be completely different. It may be completely different here than it was there. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is he did get a little complex on defense, and college kids, maybe you want them to be playing fast and everything else. And mm-hmm. you get into is he auditioning for this or is he auditioning for that sometimes with coordinators? But it's just, I mean, look, you got to look at the results. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is Ohio State, based on the amount, based on the, like, the recruiting rankings and the kind of kid that was going through there and where the kids are going in the draft, there is not, there are not two programs in America who have more defensive talent than Ohio State. Mm-hmm. So giving up 50 points to Maryland, I mean, it's not really excusable, is
right,
it?
Right, no, it's not. Because they, you're right. They, historically, they've always pumped out tons of great defense. Bert, you heard the audio from NFL Films.
Yep.
The mic'd up.
You
Bill
guys are
Belichick.
Tough on Sean, huh?
Well, dude, but I feel like he deserved it, though. I mean, I
friend
was,
of Bert.
Bert, I'm sitting here going, I'm sure Sean. He's not, like, Sean McVay is like a guy I would love to have a beer with. Like, just seems like a coolest guy. But you, if you, being honest with yourself.
You probably sit there and tell you how great Ted, you were so great when you won those Super Bowls, Ted.
Thanks,
oh, there was nobody like you coming in the middle of the field.
Coach.
Oh, my God. The way you used to take on. God. The way you used to just take those hits and take guys out.
That, Coach. Thank you.
You were so strong in the middle of the field. Such a presence.
You guys are brutal.
You guys just do it
this
the right way.
The Super Bowl in year two.
You did it the right way.
Ted.
It was right before kickoff. I mean, we're going to battle.
Ted,
and he's sitting there just telling the opponent how great he is.
Just respect you so much, Ted. Just everything you did.
Your thoughts on that?
I thought the timing of it was terrible.
I
actually thought there was something really interesting that Sean said there, though. And it was, it's amazing how you can morph from one thing to the next consistently. And I think that's something we don't appreciate enough around here, because there aren't, I don't think there's another team that can do what the Patriots do, which is going from being like what they've been the last 10 years, which is like a spread them out, throw it all over the yard team. Now they're a power running team, right? On defense, they play man most of the year. Now all of a sudden on the biggest stage, they're switching to zone. Like that
but
is.
But not only are they
the
switching to zone, they are giving looks that Goff thought were man.
Right.
Right? And so they were disguising it. And before the snap, it looks like man. And then all of a sudden they drop into cover two. And you're like, what the?
And
this kid has no idea what to do with that. He's like, wait. You know, in his head, he's so, you know, pre-programmed. And as a head coach in his head, and is, you know, with 15 seconds left, his coach telling him, look, it's a man look.
Coach said he'd be open on this play. He's not.
No, he's not.
I'm going to tell you what. That explains. And I went out to dinner with someone with a team on Monday night, and that explains
the whole team.
Someone with a team with another team, and if you want to go down a philosophical rabbit hole, that is a huge reason why Belichick's assistants, like what we saw on Sunday night, explains a huge part of why Belichick's assistants don't succeed other places.
Making your job suck just a little bit less.
This helps my emotion.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Trying to look for you, you know me.
So much respect for you.
Likewise.
You're the best.
You've done a great job.
You're the best, man. The way that you guys are able to shift your identity and really still be able to figure it out, I mean, week in and week out, it's unbelievable, man. Really, so much respect for you and the way you do it, man. You're what's right about coaching.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, Coach.
Sean McVay chatting with Bill Belichick before Super Bowl 53 kicked off in Atlanta. All right, so tell us, Bert. Tell us that story.
Yeah, so
that another team shared some info with you and why you believe Belichick assistants don't do well as head coaches.
We've broken down like the talent here, right? Like, and I don't think the talent. I don't think they're raw. Like, if you want to just go on raw ability, I don't think that the Patriots roster is top 10 in the NFL right now. Right?
I think that's fair to say.
Like, I don't think they're top 10 in the NFL from just a raw ability standpoint. And the reason why, and it's just, it crystallized to me this year, because I think they've gone further with it this year than they had in the recent past, at least. Bill's willing to give up on raw ability to get guys who are intelligent, to get guys who are flexible, to get guys who are versatile. So he can basically go out there and play chess with them. Right. Like, and so many of the things that the Patriots do from a personnel standpoint to bring guys in, like, are done to enable Belichick's coaching to create a huge advantage over the opponent. Right. So I think that is a major part of, I think it's a major part of what the 2018 Patriots were, and their ability to toggle from zone to man, to toggle from, I mean, like, you know, the big adjustment in the game on offense was they're going 22 personnel in the fourth quarter and throwing out of it. Because they wanted to force the Rams to put their big guys in the field. Mm-hmm. Rams put their big guys in the field. What happens? Now, all of a sudden, a glorified defensive end, Samson Ebukam, is covering Rob Gronkowski. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they were able to generate matchups because they've got all these players who are versatile. And they were able to force the Rams to they were able to force the Rams into bad situations, bad matchups, because Belichick's out there playing chess with his team. Okay? So we have that established. What happens when other coaches go and try to do that other places? It works because it's Belichick. It works because you've got the most brilliant football coach of all time playing chess. What happens when someone else is trying to do that somewhere else? Well, if you don't have that tactical advantage, if you don't have Belichick, now all of a sudden you're just less talented than everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that's somebody on another team. Like I brought this up. Like we were talking about, like how the Patriots are put together, and you know this guy from another team. You know, I'm out to dinner with him the other night, and he just says to me, "Yep." He's like, and that's exactly why it doesn't work anywhere else, because if you try to do that, if you try to build a team like that somewhere else, and you don't have a guy who's a brilliant tactician pushing the buttons, now you're just less talented than everybody else.
I would say this too, Bert. Though the reason that Bill can morph and adapt and be different things is because he's got buy-in from the guys.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, look, I took a more of a diminished role when he came. You know, it was one of those. So you got to buy into the diminished. There's so many more. Bill made the role player a thing in the NFL.
Right.
Like, I mean, Adrian Claiborne, it's like he's a healthy scratch for a long time. And then in this game, there's Adrian Claiborne. And you got to, how do you get the best out of Adrian Claiborne? Well, he's got to buy in. He can't be unselfish. So you can't have guys saying to Bill, "Screw you, Bill. You know what? You're not playing me like that."
That's all part of it. And that's why I think, like, you know, you hear their draft board is incredibly small. Like, right?
Is it really?
Like their draft board, there are years where there are 50 or 75 guys in the draft board. That's it. And
man, I'd love to be in that war room.
And the reason why is because Bill knows exactly what he's looking for. And it's, here's what I need here, here's what I need there. And if you don't fit that, he's just, I mean, like, it goes back to Pioli saying this 15 years ago, we're not collecting talent, we're building a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Bill has a very specific vision for what he wants. And confidence in himself as a coach, where if I'm doing, like, I want to build the team a certain way, so here's the best way to put it, right? He wants to build the team a certain way, and he's also not just looking to put together an all-star team. He's looking to build a team to combat whatever's going on in the league at that point, right? So what's happening in the league now? Everyone's spreading everybody out, right? And so as a result of everybody spreading everybody out, we see what the Rams have done. We see what the Chiefs have done. We see what the Saints have done, right? What's happening on defense? Teams are loading up on 240-pound defensive
smaller
ends
guys
and 220-pound linebackers. So what does Bill do?
Devlin, get in there.
He's got a fullback.
Run those guys over.
Right, and they draft a 230-pound tailback, Sonny Michel, and they draft, and he didn't play this year, but they draft an offensive lineman in the first round, and Isaiah Wynn, and they bring in Trent Brown. And now all of a sudden, you've got Trent Brown like blocking somebody who's 100 pounds lighter than he is. So it's just like there's this – I just think there's this like fascinating game of chess that goes on, and I think it's so specific to Bill.
He sees trends that other people don't, and he can exploit trends.
And I think it's like it's almost impossible to replicate. Because of how good he is.
Because you've got to be him.
Right.
You know, you can't just be another coach that tries to learn a few things from him. You've got to be him.
And you know who's been
a killer.
You know who's
cold blooded.
You know who's
emotionless.
Been, you know who's
killer.
Been, not McVay.
No, here's not what, the warm and fuzzy McVay. No.
Not McVay.
So I think the guy who's done it best, who's gone somewhere else and adapted it and made it different is Bill O'Brien in Houston, right? But look at his team. Are they trying to do it with less talent? DeAndre Hopkins, Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt. Mm-hmm. They're not like the one place where he's gotten caught flat-footed there was a quarterback. He tried to make it work with less a quarterback because he figured, okay, well, I can make it work if I just have a smart guy who understands the offense. So he went through.
I was down there covering that team. It was brutal.
He went through Ryan Fitzpatrick, and they were talented everywhere else.
Hoyer.
And then all of a sudden, he's like, okay, well,
Brock Osweiler.
Billy, to his credit, what did he do? Well, all right, I got to adapt a little bit here, and he goes and gets Deshaun Watson. So, I think that there's just. There are answers there for us.
He changed his offense drastically for Deshaun Watson. We were all wondering if he would do that.
I just think this particular Super Bowl gave us answers like we maybe never got before, because on offense, they switched at the end of the game and used their versatility against the Rams and forced the Rams into bad spots. And on defense, they morphed who they were altogether because they knew that the Rams' offense and the quarterback in particular – wasn't prepared for what they were going to bring.
And he's got big ones, man, because he will change what he's done all season long in the biggest game of the year. My last year, 2004, we played a completely different defense for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
In the first half, they were befuddled. The second half, they made adjustments and they came back into the game. But we were so heavy base defense that year.
Yep.
3-4 defense. Most of the season, all right, was, you know, sprinkling nickel and that kind of. We went 4-3 front. We had a 4-3 front in that game. They didn't know what. Like, we haven't seen this on film all year. In the biggest game, he made a drastic change. Most teams would never do that.
But here's why. You need a certain type of player to pull that off.
Right.
You can't just like you need a certain type of player to be able to do that on the biggest stage. Do the Rams have those types of guys?
They might have some.
They might have some, but
by and large, no.
But you guys have
like other
versatility on defense. But the kinds of guys they had,
we have so much versatility. McGinnis,
Ted, like the defensive linemen that you move them all around, like Seymour and Ty Warren, and I mean, it's just like you looked at the way that like they put the team together. It's not like. In December, it's like, okay, well, like let's try something else and see if it works. No, they actually bring in people who are able, both mentally and physically, to toggle from one thing to the next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.